It is Card Knock Life, episode 60, blah, 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 blah.
62. Is what the math says, but I'm no genius.
No, you are a genius, Daryl. And we are back at you with more information. There's lots to talk about today. And first of all, I want to go over something here. I had some experiences in the world of Magic in the last week that were worth talking about. Did you play Magic last week? There was an event in Baltimore, wasn't there?
There was an event in Baltimore. I unfortunately couldn't get teammates because all the people I knew from around here were already on teams.
Oh, shit.
But I did go hang out in the Buzz.
Yeah.
Picked up some cards from my vintage deck.
Yeah.
Just wandered around and watched the team tournament. It was really cool.
Oh, cool. That's definitely an interesting event. So it was Modern and Standard, correct?
No, it was Modern, Standard, and Legacy.
And Legacy. Okay. Then how is the breakdown of that? How did that all work out?
All right. So how it works is it's seat A, seat B, seat C. Like, I don't know how Star City did it because I wasn't playing in the event. A is Legacy, B is Modern, C is Standard. All of you play simultaneously. And the first team to win two matches of Magic between the three wins that round. So if you, me, and Nick were on a team, and I won Legacy and Nick won Modern, didn't matter what you did in the Standard. You could just sit there and dirtle forever and lose, and it wouldn't matter. So, but that's how it was structured. And so once you finish your round, like say you were playing Burn, and you just burnt your opponent out in like 4 minutes, and you were done. You are allowed to look over into your teammates' games and offer them advice.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah.
That is, that's unique.
Like even while you're in the middle of your game, you are allowed to like look over into your teammates' games and offer them advice. Like that's free information flow. It's just like you're all one player and you can play the three games. Like if there's advice requested or if you're like, I don't know what I should do with this mulligan or something like that. You know, you can ask those questions.
I wonder if that didn't cause any conflict. Like, there are some people that don't want their teammates to, like, be talking to them. Like, especially when they don't have all of the previous information. Like, they walk into a game and they're, like, just poking over your shoulder, like, hey, you should do that. And you're like, no, man. Like, I know that he's running this card in his deck because I've been participating in the last 30 minutes of this game. You haven't, you know?
Right. So it's not, like, mandatory that I, like, poke over your shoulder and be like, hey, why don't you do that?
Well, sure.
But like, if you can feel free to like, if you're trying to figure out how to sequence your lands and your turns, or like if you need a mulligan, if you have a tough mulligan and you want a second opinion, you could look over to me and go, hey man, I'm not sure about this mulligan. You know, it's got all these qualities, and you can point at them. So, you know, obviously we're not giving all the information away to your opponent if you keep it. And you know, what do you think about this mulligan? And I could just go and be like, well, this and this are fine. So I think, you know, based on the percentages the way your deck's built, you could probably get away with this.
Yeah.
And then you could choose to keep or mulligan.
Well, sure, I get that. I'm just saying, I'm wondering how much how many arguments were formed because their teammates were trying to offer them advice in the middle of the game while they're trying to concentrate. But, you know, whatever. It sounds interesting. This is the first time that Star City Games has done this sort of thing, right?
Yeah, it is.
That's cool. I mean, I'm glad they're trying new things. I think it's cool to do all three formats and, like, put them in an equal light like that, because I know that a lot of times, like, you know, like at the Pro Tour, it's like you've got your limited and you've got your constructed, but it's like definitely one of those is more important than the other, because the constructed is the one that gets the top eight at the end of the Pro Tour. Like, you can play awesome and limited, and, like, you can get yourself in a really good position to, like, get into the top eight, but you have to win the top eight in constructed, right? Like, that one... You know, like, how does this top eight work with the same?
It's the same structure.
It's the same structure. Okay, gotcha.
Modern.
That's interesting.
No, I'm not sure. No, I'm not sure if they didn't play like, and so that's something I'd have to check. Like, the concept is the same, but I'm not sure if they didn't play like standard first. Like, if they didn't play one match at a time in the top eight.
Yeah.
But during the tournament, everything was played simultaneously.
Wow, that's cool.
So, like, you played all of your matches simultaneously in the tournament.
I'm sure that top eight took, like, extra long.
Not necessarily, because if one team just, like, if you just like crushed 2-0 with like two very fast aggressive decks,
yeah,
then you wouldn't necessarily have gotten into something taking so long.
Yeah. All right. Well, so yeah, that happened in Baltimore, and we can go over those results later. It's kind of tough to talk about, you know, that because
real quick before we continue, I just kind of clicked in the coverage to kind of see what was going on.
Yeah.
So what it is in the feature match area, they have all three of the players playing simultaneously like they would, and then they can flip back and forth between the games. Because, like, I'll send you a screenshot of what it looks like. But, like, they've got the scroll of all three games set up, and then they're telling you, like, this is the game we are on, and this is the, like, score and the life totals and everything. Okay. And so.
Gotcha.
But, yeah, it's really neat.
Okay. All right. Yeah, man. So of course, it looks like the winning team. I'll just put it at this. It's like I said, we can cover the event and go over the results. But it's like kind of an inbred meta, obviously, because of all like the wonkiness of the format. But Ben Stark, Matt Nass, and Sam Party, an all star team here. Sam Party playing Sultai Control and Legacy. Matt Nass playing Death Shadow Aggro and Modern, which we thought was dead, is not. And Ben Stark playing Black Green Delirium in Standard took this thing down.
Yep.
And then, yeah, this is, like, super interesting. Like, just take a look at these results. It's pretty fun.
The Death Shadow deck is actually very interesting because it's not a, like, all-in Death Shadow deck like we're used to seeing.
Yeah.
Because when we were talking about all Death Shadow, we were like, the all-in Death Shadow deck, just not a thing. And we were correct. Like, you know, Gitaxian Probe, Street Wraith.
Oh my god, this is awesome.
Go to eight is not a thing anymore. But they decided to play more like a Jund deck that uses its lowering its life total as a resource. You know, they are playing a 56 card deck, they are playing 4 Street Wraith, and you know, they're playing a bunch of Shocklands, but they're playing, you know, 4 Thoughtseize, 4 Inquisition to go down that Jund route. And then, you know, Death Shadow and Tarmogoyf is their main threats. But they've chosen to include a Traverse the Ubenwall package. Between Mishra's Bauble, you know, things like Street Wraith just getting discarded into your graveyard. You do have sorceries and instants, and you do have artifacts. And I don't see any – there's a single Seal of Fire in the main board to have an enchantment, you know, things like that. And then you have lands, obviously, the fetch lands to go to the graveyard. They are using Traverse the Human Wall to tutor up bullet creatures. In the main board, you only see a single Renegade Rallier as the Traverse bullet. So
I love that.
You can Traverse her Renegade Rallier, break her bench, plug it, and get a giant Death Shadow.
Yeah. Grab a Goryph, too.
Or Tarmogoyf, depending on what's available for you. But you see the Traverse the Human Wall package being much better in the sideboard. You know, there's Fulminator Mage, Ranger of Eos for you to go get double Death Shadow, Idolon Rhetoric against Storm, Kataki against Affinity, and then they decided to have a little bit of a Jundy, junky sideboard here that, you know, if they need to get a little grindier, you can bring in Ranger of Eos, Liliana the Veil, and then 3 Lingering Souls, because a lot of decks would expect this deck to try and get bigger and play, you know, try and play. It's playing a bunch of big dudes. So your opponent's going to bulk up their removal to try and kill those dudes, and then you're going to go wide Lingering Souls.
You know, this is awesome. You know what you can do is, and I've never seen this or even considered this before, but there's only one of each of these in the deck, but Seal of Fire and Renegade Rallier is a pretty sick interaction as well, because Seal of Fire is a great way to trigger the revolt, but it's also a great target for Renegade Rallier. Kind of turns him into a Flame Tongue Kavu type.
That is very true. You could do actual 4 damage, so that would be a Flame Tongue Kavu, basically. That is a nice interaction. I actually didn't even think of either. You could also use your Renegade Rallier with Mishra's Bauble to just draw a card, get a little extra information. Yeah, all in all, this is pretty sweet. Like,
so, yeah, so I want to save the results. Like, there are tons of events this weekend. I want to go back into these later in the cast here, but there's a lot of interesting stuff to talk about. Like I said, I did have some experiences in Magic myself. I want to kind of segue off of this Renegade Rallier tangent here, because I'm, like, legit in love with this guy. Like, Oh my God, dude. We had our conversation about Renegade Rallier and Eldrazi Displacer on the last cast, and I took that and built a deck with it. So shameless self-promotion here. I'm going to be posting like a primer on that. Probably by the time this cast is out, it'll be posted on the podcast because I'm going to be finishing it up tonight and putting it up. But, dude, this deck, it's the real thing. No, it is standard, though I did see one in the process of doing this. There's one up on MTG Goldfish that Seth put up that's basically the modern version of this green-white ramp. But I've got a standard version of this, green-white Emiria Renegade ramp, which uses Emiria Shepherd, which we talked about the synergy with that one. But Emiria Shepherd is the 7-mana 4/4 flying creature, which has landfall, put a non-land permanent from your graveyard into your hand. Or if the land is a plains, you can put that non-land permanent directly into play. So, nice. Obviously, Evolving Wilds is a great target for Renegade Rallier because it's both a way to ramp because you can return the Evolving Wilds from your graveyard to play really easily to get another land. But it's also a great way to trigger the revolt, right? Because you can sacrifice the land to trigger the revolt. And I do that frequently in this deck. So it's also a great way to trigger the landfall twice on the Shepherd, obviously, right? So turn 8, right? You play, or, you know, once you've got 8 mana, I suppose, you play the Shepherd for 7, drop the Terramorphic Expanse. Doesn't matter what you get at that point. You get, like, say, a Nissa Vital Force back in your hand. You crack the Terramorphic Expanse. I keep saying that. I mean Evolving Wilds, of course. Same card. It's the same standard version. And you fetch out a Plains. And with that Plains, you return a Renegade Rallier from your graveyard to play. Renegade Rallier triggers a revolt. You grab the Terramorphic Expanse back from your graveyard, trigger the landfall again.
Get back another permanent.
Back another permanent. Crack it. Get a Plains. Do you have another Renegade Rallier in your graveyard? You know, do it again. So this is like a ridiculous chain where you're just like, you can, there's just so much value in this deck. And on top of that, Eldrazi Displacer blinking a Renegade Rallier is just insane value. Okay, 3 mana, return target 2 mana, or 2 CMC permanent from your graveyard to the play. And so what you do is you just 3 mana ramp, put a basic land into play, because Evolving Wilds does that perfectly in this deck.
So I guess my question is, what's the payoff? Are you playing like an Ulamog or?
Well, here's what you do. You go super wide because you get a bunch of creatures, and then you don't lose any board state because one of the best ways to trigger this and one of the best creatures to keep returning with this is Selfless Spirit. Selfless Spirit is going to keep your guys around, right? And you can practically instant speed get the Selfless Spirit into play, like, you know, if one dies or you happen to have to sacrifice it, because you just blink your Rallier and put it into play again. Sure. So you're always going to have your guys out. You get up to 5 guys. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess my question here is from my perspective, you know, you're saying you can ramp.
Yep.
But there's no real payoff. Like, you're not paying off the ramp strategy by doing something over the top powerful. You're just kind of like, I'm just going to put some lands in the play and hope to draw gas for the rest of the game. Like, I'm not saying it's wrong, but I'm just saying, like, if you can really ramp as aggressively as it sounds like this deck can ramp,
yeah,
why aren't we playing a payoff card like an Ulamog or something like that?
Well, I thought about that. I've got Worldbreaker on the side.
That's a pretty good one. That one's a pretty good one, yeah.
But I find that I don't need it. Like, you get plenty of mana in, like, the ramp being, like, Emiria. Like, that's, like, the top of the curve. But, like, you don't need to go, like, much bigger than that. Okay, in the matchups that you do, like, you grab the Worldbreaker. But, like, just having, like, a bunch of 4-4 flyers, like, is usually enough to win the game. And just, like, having a bunch of creatures. But there are plenty of mana sinks because some of, like, the things that you, like, are reanimating are, like, Vessel of Nascency or, like, a bunch of, like, Thraven Inspectors for clue tokens. So, like, you're sinking a bunch of mana into, like, card draw that's going to, like, net you more creatures. And then you just go wide. Or you eventually, like, hit an Ormondal because you have a Westvale Abbey and, like, you're sacrificing your creatures. You know, that kind of thing.
Oh, okay, sure. I wasn't seeing the payoff, which is why I was trying to figure out how are we paying off.
Right.
But stuff like Ormondal makes a big more sense.
Sure. So it's interesting. I could go on all day about all the like crazy interactions in this deck, but it's so fun to play, and man, it's like actually great got great matchups in standard right now. Worldbreaker is surprisingly like incredible tech against like vehicles, and like getting up to 7 mana on a deck that can do this, like this engine of like just popping Evolving Wilds into play, like starting on like turn four. It's pretty reasonable. If you can survive that long, which is doable. Granted that you're playing conservatively, you can hit World Breaker and just block anything that they're throwing at you.
Kind of speaking on this line, I wanted to bring to your attention a modern deck, Renegade Rallyer deck.
Yeah.
That Michael Majors made for a Versus video that I actually thought was kind of cool. It's Modern Renegade Rallyer Return to the Ranks.
Uh-huh.
So Return to the Ranks returns all X2MCMC or less creatures has Convoke. So, you get to play these really powerful modern 2CMC or less creatures like Tidal Sculler, Blood Artist, Satyr Wayfinder's not powerful, but Voice of Resurgence, Safi, Urxtider, and with Blood Artist, Safi, and Renegade Rallyer, and Sack Outlet, you can go infinite and kill your opponent.
Mm-hmm.
But then you have stuff like Spell Sky, Pride Mage, creatures of various different utility that you can return. I saw this deck and I kind of was considered that it might have went, because it was playing for Collective Company, might have been better to go the Rally the Ancestors route so that you could play Eternal Witness and buy it back every time you rallied. Because then you have something between, Renegade Rallyer and Eternal Witness. You're buying back your Collective Companies or your Rally the Ancestors. You're getting back, Voice of Resurgences and Viscera Seers and all this just various and fetch lands. You can play turn one fetch land or turn one land bird, turn two fetch land, break it, Renegade Rallyer, get your fetch land, break it. And then all of a sudden you have the mana to cast, Rally Ancestors for three. So you're going to be able to accrue just this giant snowball of value when you start hitting things like Eternal Witness with your Rally of the Ancestors. So it was an idea to sort of shift the deck build just a tiny bit, and then you can like switch cards around, like maybe you don't need 4 Tidal Sculler, or maybe you don't need 4 Satyr Wayfinder. Maybe you want to play some Kusali Prime Mage's main board, or maybe you want to have a Kataki or like these weird bullet creatures but there's a large combo potential here that also allows you to play this very powerful engine card in Rally Ancestors.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. That sounds kind of like the Frontier Rally deck. Is the Frontier version of the deck playing Renegade Rallyer now? I wonder.
I haven't seen it in a while. Yeah.
Not that we play Frontier or anything, but,
no.
But I haven't heard about it. I know that there's like a Naya deck that is kind of experimenting with that. Like a Naya Coco deck that's got some Ralliers running around in it. So
yeah,
that's a modern deck.
The pros are
trying it out. That's for sure.
I actually played this deck kind of as just a test concept, and it has a surprisingly good control matchup, based on some strange things you can do. So basically I played a turn 2 Rallier, off of a fetch, put a land into play. Turn 3, I had 5 mana, and I went Viscera Seer, Safi Urxtider, Tidehollow Sculler, trigger on the stack, sack Tidehollow, sack Safi, target Renegade Rallyer, sack Renegade Rallyer, put it back into play, target Tidehollow Sculler, trigger Tidehollow Sculler, sack Tidehollow Sculler, and just exile 2 cards from my opponent's hand.
Nice.
Yeah, so I left myself with a 3-2 and got like 4 scries. So it's like there are like tricky moving part things like that you can do with this deck. It's super fun. Like if you as a Renegade Rally fan, I'm sure you have almost all these cards for this. Give this a spin in Modern. I'm sure you'll have a good time.
Yeah. Yeah, dude, that's my calling is playing like utility creature decks. So unfortunately, I don't have the Collected Companies online right now, and I think I need to get them because
they are $12.
They are $12, yeah. but the times that I put them in my cart and taken them out of my cart, I just don't feel like the deck is there right now for me to like invest in it. But I don't think it's far away. I think that Coco's really, really, gained a boost since the most recent banning. And there's actually one that placed in one of these GPs that we can talk about later on. So
sure,
we'll get there. And then I did play F&M this week. A friend of mine and I went out to a game shop and played a little F&M. I played Blue Red Emerge, which is like actually Grixis Emerge, but it doesn't have any black mana for the prized amalgams. That deck is nuts. I don't know if you ever given that a shot, but that deck's crazy. Nice. Basically like modern dredge. So, it's crazy. Yeah. Like just plays like Fevered Vision and like Cathartic Reunion, like discards a bunch of like the scabs and like a bunch of scabs, like pitch like prized amalgams and Kozilek's Returns and like put the dudes into play. Emerge what do you call the Deep Fiend?
Elder Deep Fiend.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I could go on about that, but the deck is cool. It's insane to play, and the mirror match is just nutso, which was my first game. So it was like triggers upon triggers upon triggers, like going back and forth. So that's a lot of fun. I think it's a really good deck right now, too. So definitely worth considering if you're going to any standard events. Super cheap.
I just played a shameful amount of Vintage this weekend.
Oh, yeah.
I played on a giant pile of Blood Moon Vintage on the weekend. I got to live the dream a lot this weekend, which was to target my opponent with Deck Fade while I had Consecrated Sphinx in play.
What is his ultimate?
Deck Fade, it is -6. You get an emblem with whenever you target a permanent, take control of it. Target a permanent with a spell, specifically, take control of it.
Oh, I see. You're doing the target player draws 2 cards and then discards 2 cards?
Correct, but I have a Consecrated Sphinx.
Oh, that's the one you're talking about. I see what you're saying. Yeah, that is nuts.
Yes. Yeah. Like, I resolved the Deck Fade on turn 3, and then my opponent casted a Jace the Mind Sculptor, and I mana drained it. And then I tapped 2 islands and played Consecrated Sphinx, and then targeted them with a Deck Fade +2.
Yeah, I suppose there are a lot of ways to abuse that, like Notion Thief and... like that white Spirit of the Labyrinth and stuff. Wow, I didn't realize it was Target Player.
That's Target Player. It's El Busto. Like,
that is El Busto.
Also good with our good friend Leovol.
Yeah.
Draw 1 card and discard 2.
I hear that guy's like $60 right now, isn't he?
He is very $60 in real life, I'm pretty sure. I have to check because I might want to get some Leovolds.
Yeah, he's quite expensive. He's like much more than the actual product that he comes in. Yeah, you can get him on TCG Player for $42. So not $60, but $42.
I think he might be that expensive on MTGO, though.
Yeah, oh my god. Yeah, he's expensive on MTGO. So talk to me about Deck Faden. Would this guy totally break Modern? Like, if he was reprinted in a Modern legal set, or like maybe just somehow reprinted in Modern, would he just totally ruin Modern?
No, not at all.
No, you don't think so?
Card be completely fine. So you have to look at the composition of its abilities, and say, you know, are any of these abilities really broken? So +1 Faithless Looting. I mean, being able to just Faithless Loot every turn and sift through your deck is very powerful.
Sure.
Like, it would enable Dredge strategy. Dredge is already like red, blue. X black usually, green, so they could splash Deck Faden and have draw 2 discard 2 every turn, which would be very powerful for Dredge.
Yes,
it would enable Grixis Control also to just like loot through the bad cards and enable Delve. So it does kind of work with these graveyard based synergies. Your different Sword of the Meek strategies would take advantage of like discarding artifacts that don't do anything, but you know, the other two abilities are pretty lackluster. -2, take an artifact. There's not a lot of good artifacts running around in Modern. There's not a lot of swords or Baleful Strixes or Moxen or...
They're not, but you bet your ass I'd be playing a Liquid Metal Coating deck with him.
I mean, that's the thing. You could certainly Liquid Metal Coating deck bait.
That would be so fun.
Yeah, but like I said, there's not Moxen, there's not Time Vault, there's not Blightsteel Colossus. Stuff like that's not just running rampant in Modern that you'd be like, I want that.
Right, yeah, I get you.
So -2, not as powerful. Not even really particularly useful against Affinity, where you can try and like steal their like cranial blades. Like that's not particularly helpful because it stays equipped with creatures. So unless you have other creatures, not helpful. And then so you're looking at, well, what can I do with the minus six? The minus six is where it gets kind of interesting and could be particularly good in Modern. But the question is, are there spells in Modern that target permanents and then don't kill them? Because you have to cast specifically spells. It's not just abilities. Otherwise, you could just like get a card that has the ability to be like, I want that and that and that and that. No, none of those things are things you can do. So like, is there like a thing like Pyroblast where you destroy target permanent if it's blue? You know, you have to have basically cards that do nothing. Like Lightning Bolt, your opponent's Tarmogoyf, and then you steal it. You know, stuff like that. So unfortunately, there's not these spells really that target lands. So you couldn't like steal all of your opponent's lands like that. And if you bolt your opponent, you can't steal their planeswalkers because you have to target them, not the planeswalker. So it's kind of like there's no real good way to acquire permanents. And you know, people in our, you know, in our community will be like, well, you could play like Crimson Wisps and steal your opponent's creatures. You could, but those cards are embarrassingly bad if you don't have Black Fate. So like you want cards that are good while you don't have a Faden Emblem that are insane when you get one, and there aren't too many of those, unfortunately.
All right, so you think he's okay? All right,
I think there would be decks that play like one or two Dak Faden, but I do not think he would break Modern.
All right, I'd like to see him get reprinted. That would be sweet.
In Modern Masters, you want a Dak Faden?
I don't think that's going to happen. But hey, speaking of Modern Masters, let's transition. This is a good pivot point here. How about this? Good job. Good job, Daryl. Hey, so Wizards, this is what y'all want to hear about, actually. Not us talking about the things that we did last weekend. But
We did it in our life.
But that's why you come to us and no one else, right? Because everyone's going to talk about this week anyway. The Wizards on the Mothership talked about posted about a bunch of new stuff related to Modern Masters and Amonkhet or Amonkhet. How do you want to say that?
It's Amonkhet.
It's a made-up word. We could Amonkhet. All right, Amonkhet.
I mean, but if you look at it, it's intended to be Egyptian, so it's right. Amonkhet.
Okay, so there are – let's start with this. Modern Masters 2017 Edition Packaging. So this set comes out March 18th, which is like – March 17th, which is not long from, not far away. We're going to be getting our spoilers for this starting next week, but we got three of them today. Since everything is a reprint, the packaging tells you quite a bit about these cards. Now, Don't say it before you even say it. Let me just put it this way. Think about this. This is a set called Modern Masters. I want you to just kind of envision like three cards. There are three cards spoiled here on this packaging. Three cards that you would think would be like cards you'd want to see reprinted in a set called Modern Masters. And I want you to envision like what cards like are the epitome of the modern format, you know, that would be awesome in like a draft format, but are like perfect. They're like primed for a reprint.
What do you think? Prime for a reprint.
All right.
Tarmogoyf's not really good.
Now, typically they're creatures, right? They typically put creatures on these pack covers,
right? That's fair. But you asked me like cards that would be good in a draft format
consider the context. Pick some creatures. Probably not Tarmogoyf, right? He's not necessarily prime.
Probably not Tarmadoofus. Just trying to think. Death Shadow.
Okay.
Need a reprint?
Yeah. Cards that do a really good job of representing what Modern is as a format.
Curse Catcher?
Okay. That's fair.
But see, like, usually the cards on the packs are rares, which is the hard part, which is why like Curse Catcher would be...
Not always.
Goblin Guide.
Oh, that's a great one. Yeah. All right. So knowing that Daryl is well aware of what these cards actually are, we know that they are neither Curse Catcher or Goblin Guide or Damnation. So Daryl, what are they actually?
Domery Raid.
Yeah.
Big G Daddy Sizzle himself, Gristle Brand, the man of Mini Raisin Brand, two scoops.
Yes.
And this looks like Elspeth to me, but you've told me it's Stoic Angel.
Yeah, the fact that you're questioning it means to me that they have failed in designing a pack that has a creature on it that represents the modern format, a format that you consider yourself perhaps an expert in.
No, I'm not an expert, but I know things.
I think you've been playing the format for quite a while.
Yeah, I have. That looks like Elspeth to me.
Yeah, it does look like Elspeth. It's certainly not Elspeth. In fact, that is the original art for Stoic Angel, which is a creature. One green, white, blue from Shards of Alara. Four vigilance flying. You remember it now?
No, I already knew what it was. When you said the word Stoic Angel, I know exactly what the card is. It's a one bant, 3/4 flyer, vigilant flyer. Your opponents can, or is each player or your opponents can only untap one
players creature? Can't.
Players can only untap one creature each turn.
Players can't untap more than one creature during their untap steps. This card doesn't see the light of day in the modern format. I've never seen it played in modern in my entire life. I don't know what it's doing on the pack in Modern Masters 2017.
No clue. It's a pretty lady.
But for that, if that's the case, I don't know what Domri Raid's doing there either, because Domri Raid sees play as a one of in Zoo in 2005 once ever. So I don't know what he's doing there. That's a $4 mythic.
It's a mythic rare, though. It's a card.
It's a $4 mythic rare on the cover of a $10 pack of cards, is what it is.
Recognize that card. People know what Domri Raid is.
Did you think of it how I just said it? It's a $4 mythic rare on a $10 pack of cards. Is that not already disappointing to you?
I mean, I certainly don't want to open a Domri Raid pack.
I mean, even the Grizzle brand is primed to be less valuable than the $10 pack of cards, because right now you can get it for $13. So it's going to be worth less than $13 when it's in this pack. So I'm already going into this, I'm already anticipating that Modern Masters 2017 was going to be disappointing. I'm not expecting much from this set. But, man, I was really hoping to see Snapcaster on one of these packs or something. You know, something to give some value to this set.
So Modo players will be very happy about Gristlebrand getting reprinted in Modern Masters.
They will, won't they?
Gristlebrand on Modo is $25.
Oh, okay.
Because Avacyn Restored is a garbage set that nobody opened. So there's that, but yeah, I mean, I'm not a huge fan, if you want me to be honest.
All right.
I'm curious to see if they can recover from the disaster that is showing me these three cards on packs.
All right, now, so I'm gonna now take a look at the box real quick though, because there's more. There's the box that these three cards come in, the Modern Masters box.
That looks like a Jace.
You think so?
That could be Snapcaster Mage. That could be like a new art Snapcaster Mage.
It looks like some kind of blue creature. He's got like some lightning bolts kind of like bouncing off of his cloak.
Yeah.
But it also looks like some kind of it could be like an artifact creature too. That could be a Solemn Simulacrum.
I think it might be a Jace. I think we might be. I don't know, but
I don't think that's a Jace, Daryl.
It's not Jace, really. You're right.
Somebody in the comments said, "Is that new or reprinted art? New art Venser? That could be.
That would be kind of
Someone sweet. Said Snapcaster reprint.
I mean, I think it's a Snapcaster reprint, honestly, because if you look at the era that these cards are from,
yeah,
Snapcaster fits right in like that. That block timeline. It could be Geist of St. Draft.
That could be. Geist of St. Draft is a card that could see a reprint, and that wouldn't be so disappointing. Geist is like a $10 card on Modo.
Yeah.
Or seven, maybe.
Can we go to Amonkhet? Because I want to talk about
Let's move on.
I just want to talk about how cool stuff is on the front of the packs, and all this just looks sweet. So
yeah, on the plus side.
Gideon looks like a badass on the far left. In the middle, there's giant golden cat thing. I don't know what the hell that is, but yeah, it looks cool. Sweet. There's very pissed off Sphinx. And there's like two things. There's like a person. and there's like a thing that I cannot even identify. Like, but like, this set looks sweet.
Yeah, I'm digging this Egyptian theme. This is cool.
Me
and
too.
The whole Nico Bolas like looming over everything is pretty cool too. So that's gonna be pretty badass.
New Liliana, new Gideon. I like the arts on both of them.
Yeah. Yeah, those are the intro pack planeswalkers that we're gonna get, Liliana and Gideon. And you're right about that. The art is not, it's like the total cop out, like reject art that you typically get in these. And I mean, no offense to the artist, but you typically when you have these intro pack planeswalkers, they are less than stellar artworks on them. These are fantastic. They're awesome.
Well, let's talk about the real deal here, which is those full art basic lands.
Yeah, this is what we all came for here. 1 in 4 are the odds. Not every pack is going to include one, but now we have been promised Amonkhet basic lands, full art.
Let me just talk about how I'm a huge fan of playing revised whiteboarded basic lands, and I might be changing my mind, because these basic lands with the bullet symbol in the back of them are badass. Like,
yeah, that's pretty cool.
Like, these are all amazingly beautiful. And I might have to just buy, like, 50 of each of these full art lands because they're so gorgeous.
So what Daryl's referring to is these basic lands basically are taken from the perspective of, like, the forest, the plains, the island, the mountain, and the swamp. All different, like, viewpoints of the, like, Nico Bolas horns. But from the mountain, from the swamp, and from the island with these, like, gargantuan, like, mammoth horns, like, looming in the background. So it's, like, pretty cool that we're looking at the same thing from, like, different, like, locations.
Yeah, it's just amazing. It's amazingly gorgeous, breathtaking art, and I want all of them.
There's, like, this really stellar-looking, like, in fact, like, there are, like, 2 or 3 suns and, like, a lot of them. And, like, there's, like, this theme of, like, this, like, really, like, bright, like glaring sun just beaming down in the background of almost all of them. It's really awesome.
It's just,
but this mountain, man, this mountain is beautiful.
Yeah, I just want them. Archenemy Nico Bolas. I don't know what the heck this is.
Yeah, little information. Okay, Archenemy Nico Bolas says, want to fight against Nico Bolas himself, or maybe you want to play as the Dastardly Dragon yourself to take on 3 friends at once. So Archenemy was a product, of course, that was kind of a failure as a product. But for some reason, the Archenemy Planes, or the Archenemy, like, what is it, Scheme cards, are, like, kind of rare and are, like, kind of valuable. So Archenemy is a product where they pit 1 player against 3 players, and there are these Scheme cards that you flip to kind of balance the game out. So it used to be the case that you would buy, like, one, like, tiny box that gives you these Scheme cards and, like, a deck that you'd play. I think it was, like, a deck, right? It was, like, the deck that you play as the Archenemy.
Yeah.
Versus your opponents who would bring decks to the table. But it looks like this is a box that you buy with all 4 decks in it now. And then all the schemes. Kind of like as a board game. It's kind of more packaged as a board game.
So, like, I think this would be really cool if they do what I think they're going to do it, or what I think they should do with it. And so, you know, I'm going to sound really pompous. But it'd be really sweet if in this Archenemy box, you got a copy of each. Like, if there were 4 Mythic Planeswalkers in Amonkhet, 1 was Nico Bolas, and 3 were, like, the Gatewatch or whoever, whatever relevant good guys are on Amonkhet.
Yeah, that would be
sweet.
And
then you got 1 deck that was Nico Bolas in his deck with Archenemy cards, and then you got 1 copy of each of the other 3 Planeswalkers, and they had a thematic deck for them, too.
Sure. That would be cool. It's probably not going to happen. Though, you're saying, like, if they were potentially, like, the, like, intro pack planeswalkers?
Or, like, the actual set? That would be fine. Yeah, like, intro pack planeswalkers would be fine. The set planeswalkers would be cool. But something like that, where you get this feeling of there's truly is this epic battle of 3 super powerful beings that planeswalkers are, trying to take down the elder god Nico Bolas, and Nico Bolas using all of his dark schemes and hidden powers and secrets to, like, make the Gatewatch. It would be very thematically good.
Yeah, I could see that. From the perspective of the packaging here, it looks like you've got Gideon, Nyssa, and Chandra on the cover facing off against Nico. But it does say play as the Dastardly Dragon yourself. So maybe you take the perspective of Nico Bolas, in which case that would be like their free pass to like not include the Planeswalker. Like then you are the Planeswalker, you know, playing a bunch of cards that he would summon. Yeah, so I'm thinking that's probably the route they're going to go.
I know. It makes me sad though. I think it's a very good opportunity.
You know what it should include though? It should include four play mats is what it should have then. That would be sweet, right?
I agree. I mean, there's a lot of discussion of what's right and what's wrong, but like, it seems like that is available and it would be really cool.
But I'm jazzed that they're trying something different with this because I think that the problem with the old one was like balance on that game. And it's kind of cool that this is like an all-in-one box. It does say like on the side of the package, it says 30 plus minutes, 2 to 4 players. It looks very much like a board game that you'd actually like buy off the shelves of the store. So maybe they'll try something different. You know, maybe they'll like spin on, to, you know, do a little spin on the rules or something, which would be kind of interesting.
Sure. That'd be cool as well. I agree.
So there you have it. And then, of course, in this article as well, they included a bunch of like really beautiful art. I'm sure I'll I'll grab one of these and use it as our art on our website because, you know, for this post for the podcast.
I'm sure all this beautiful art will be completely embarrassing on terrible cards.
I really hope not because this Liliana picture where she's just like sitting on a throne eating grapes and getting fanned by peacock feathers, it looks like it could be a potential like tutor of some sort, doesn't it?
Yeah. Like I just have a bad feeling they're going to use all this really sick art on just awful cards.
But you're right. Like this Gideon card. 5 mana. Search your library for Gideon. Put it in your hand.
Gideon is like 10 mana.
It's that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Onward cool. to tournaments and stuff and things.
All right. Well, we've covered all that. Of course, this will be in the show notes. The last thing I want to cover, and we kind of talked about the Baltimore stuff, but there were 2 modern GPs going on last weekend, and that was GP Brisbane, which was a modern GP, like I just said. And that was won by Oliver Ox, OKS Ox, with Lantern Control.
Lantern
Control. And Lantern Control is becoming like such a deck now that we've got this Inventor's Fair nonsense going on because this is like the life gain that deck needed. Paired with like the like tutor that the deck needed to like, you know, find its like ensnaring bridges or whatever it needs to like just close out the game.
Love me some Inventor's Fair, baby. Oh yes.
Yeah. I love now that when you like look at modern deck lists, there are all these inventions. So like there's so many of these artifact inventions in these modern decks. Like all of a sudden you'll just see like these beautiful like cards pop up. Like, oh, Mox Opal, look at that. It's like gold and shiny. That's cool. All right.
Yeah.
Sideboard, we're looking at nothing too special, but we're seeing like Lost Legacy sneak into a bunch of modern sideboards.
Card's great.
Card's awesome.
Yeah.
Love it. I don't think there's much to talk about here. It's Lantern Control.
It's
a known commodity. Second place, we've got Dredge. Third place, we got Dredge. Wait, didn't Dredge get banned? Okay, what did they do? What do they do now? In place of the Golgari Grave Troll, we've got 3 Thug and 1 Haunted Dead in this first one. Other than that, looks like just about the same deck. Is there anything different that I'm missing here? I don't think so. So it's not like a straight up like put 4 Thug in. It's like we need like Haunted Dead in here too because
discard outlet. Yeah,
we need a discard outlet apparently. So is that the same case for the third place deck, Li Shi Tian? Yeah, same thing.
Yeah, same.
So this deck became like even more affordable. 175 tickets. It's like one of the cheapest modern decks you can build online.
Yeah.
In
paper, even affordable.
Yeah.
Not really.
Actually
very affordable in paper as far as modern decks go.
Yeah.
There are only 2 play sets of cards that cost over $50, which is pretty impressive for a modern deck. And that's Life from the Loam and Arid Mesa.
Yeah, and just barely at that, too.
Yeah.
Wooded Foothills?
Wooded Foothills? There's only 2 Wooded Foothills.
Oh, depends which list you're looking at, I guess.
Oh, yeah. They might have played different fetch lands.
Yeah. All right. And then fourth place, we got a Living End deck, which is this the weird one that I saw? Yes. This is... No, wait. No, this is not the weird one. I saw like a really odd Living In deck pop up on Modo the other day. No, oh yeah, here, take a look at this. Carry Zev's expertise in this one, so that he can carry Zev's the Living End out of his hand too, which is kind of cool. Yeah. And he's got main deck Blood Moon, so there you go. Kind of interesting.
Blood Moon's the thing. Yeah. Blood Moon good enough to beat people in Vintage. It's got to be good enough to beat people in Modern.
Yep. Fifth place, Affinity. Anything new in this Affinity list?
I mean, it's Affinity, dude. It can't be that. Surprise me.
I mean, let's just check. All right, nothing. Nope. Nothing. Okay. Oh yeah, here we go. Spire of Industry, one of them.
I mean, yeah. I just assume they're playing a bunch of those now.
They are playing one. This is the first major Modern event we've had since the banning, so we've really had. We don't have anything to go by, you know. White red Nahiri control. This one's quite different, though. This is our like typical like white red prison deck.
Yeah, it's just prison.
But we've got. This is kind of a different Planeswalker suite, though. One, a Johnny Vengeance. Three, Chandra Torture Defiance. It's kind of heavy on the Chandra. No, four, Nahiri. Two, Gideon.
It's pretty standard.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then... Yeah, I don't know. I guess your typical stuff. All right, got the Emrakul package in there. Seventh place, what kind of Tron is this?
Green-black.
Green-black Tron. Green-black is the Tron of choice nowadays.
This guy's not playing a single Fatal Push. Just mono Warping Wheel.
Oh, yeah, look at that.
Yeah,
and I don't know that they play Fatal Push, do they?
No, not a single one.
No, I mean,
and
like
then jump being junk, just doing junk things.
Oh, yeah, some of them do, I guess. And then junk being junk. I'm seeing, like, a lot of these decks are, like, running Walking Ballista, especially, like, these Eldrazi controls. That's kind of interesting.
Walking Ballista makes playing against shops in Vintage miserable.
Really?
Because they just, because Workshop makes 3 mana, so if they just play 2 Workshops, they just play a 3-3 Walking Ballista.
Yeah.
And if you don't have Null Rod, you're just going to, like, get attacked by it a bunch. And so, like, between Walking Ballista, Hangerback Walker and Arcbound Ravager, they have enough like +1/+1 counter synergy that you could just get completely annihilated. Like I played a game where my opponent played a 3-3 Walking Ballista and a 4-4 Hangerback Walker and then an Arcbound Ravager. And he just goes, all right, sacrifice my Hangerback Walker to my Arcbound Ravager, sacrifice all the Thopters, sacrifice the Arcbound Ravager, attack you for 9, ballista you for 9, you're dead. I'm just like, well, all right, this is how it all ends.
I feel like that Ballista is like kind of putting this Eldrazi deck back on the map. This colorless Eldrazi Tron.
Yeah.
Tron. This guy's even got like this is 9th place. I'm looking at David Mines. Has got Basilisk Caller in here to pair with the Walking Ballista, which is pretty sick. Also paired with Endbringer, yeah. So that's pretty fun.
Board wipe, baby. Got to bring in all of those.
But they're between like these Eldrazi Tron decks and like these white red Nahiri decks. There's an awful lot of Chalice of the Void going around. I wouldn't want to be on a Lightning Bolt deck these days.
Nope.
Which I am.
Oh man! You know what the best part is?
What?
S for Planeswalkers in 21st place. I'm kidding. It's like a spinoff of the Narset deck.
Yeah.
There was a
Narset deck. Where was that? I saw a Narset deck somewhere, man.
It's Brisbane.
Not that one though. I know you're talking about the 21st place one, but there's one even closer. Shoot. I can't remember where I saw that. I think it was in the Star City Games? Let me see. Let me look here. Classic. I don't know. We can go on with the cast, and I'll see if I can pull that up. But yeah, there was a straight up like Narset deck that got in a top 8 last weekend somewhere. But anyways, let's look at Grand Prix Vancouver. Death Shadow Aggro, first place. Now, this one is like more of your traditional Death Shadow aggro, but it does still have like Liliana of the Veil. It's got Gorclan Rampager. It's got Tarmogoyf. It's got some Jundi elements.
It's the exact same as the one from the Star City event, except for instead of a Gorclan Rampager, they played a Renegade Rallyer.
Oh, sure. But he's not like as like intense on like the Traverse package. Like he's not running all the like Tar Fires and stuff like that, is he?
Yeah, he is.
Oh, he does have. Oh, yeah, he has three Tar Fire. Holy cow. Okay.
Yeah, he's just not playing the enchantment, but like he's playing like a lot of those similar cards. And if you look at the sideboard, it's very much the similar. Instead of the Eidolon, he's playing the Canonist. There's a Kataki, there's Fallander, there's like a Soldier, maybe else. It's very, very similar, except Joshua Layton decided on the Gorclan Rampager to give his Death Shadow Trample, so instead of a Renegade Rallyer for value.
Wow. Yeah, so take a look at this. Joshua Layton, Jerry Thompson, and Sam Black in first, third, and fourth place, all playing almost the exact same deck, this Death Shadow aggro deck. So like I said, this is like the first like major modern event that we've had since the bannings, and like there are three like big name pros here bringing this deck to the table. If we had a pro tour, would this not be like the deck that just like takes this thing down, like all these pros, like if like descended upon this same thing that's like, wow, I mean, did you know you could do this?
People would be all about that life, but then you have to look at it. Like, there's no the protection of these decks is a bunch of discard. So if you can put things in play that beat these cards, like Engine Explosives or Liliana,
yeah,
you have your outs on table to these Tarmogoyfs and stuff. Like, if you can either keep card flow going or just like play Chalice and blank all their one drops and then just have to beat Tarmogoyf.
Uh-huh.
Like, it puts you pretty far ahead.
Sure.
So, like, I feel like this Death Shadow aggro deck, if it doesn't get underneath White Red Prison, it just, like, gets punched. Just gets punished by it really hard.
Yeah, Prison would probably...
Because if you just, like, Chalice for one-on-one against them, you turn off their best threat. Like, they have three Kolaghan, or two Kolaghan strands that can shatter your Chalice. Game one, but other than that, like, you turn off all their discard, all their burn, all their traverses, all their Death Shadows, and they have to beat you with Tarmogoyf.
Yeah, that's true.
So, I mean, they do have Ancient Grudge plus sideboards. The question is, you know, is there a way you can play a deck that pairs Chalice with blue to protect it?
Fair.
And if you can find the answer to be yes, then you can... I think you have a very powerful strategy against these Death Shadow decks, because Chalice on one shuts down so much of their deck. Like, if you could play some sort of Grixis Chalice deck, that would be very, very powerful.
All right. Well, that would probably do it, huh?
Yeah. I mean, we're talking about very difficult to build hypotheticals.
Right.
Because it's really hard to build three-color Bloodwing decks.
Sure. I mean, the deck is, like, super aggressive, too. Like, you've got to set up, like, granted, Chalice plus Simeon Spirit Guide will do the trick, but you've got to have Chalice plus Simeon Spirit Guide.
Yeah, I mean, you do.
And you've got to just not lose to Tarmogoyf.
Yeah, I mean, also, if you just leyline them, you turn off a lot of their disruption, and then so you just get to pick off these... eight threats at your leisure.
All right. Okay.
So there's that too.
All right. Well, looking further in this topic, here we got Merfolk in second place. There is Affinity in sixth place, Burn in seventh place. Now, is this just red, white, burn? What's the burn? Yeah, red, white, burn. Green in the sideboard for Destructive Revelry, but red, white in the main deck. Doesn't play the Tarkus Command at all here.
And then mono white.
Yeah, this is an interesting one. This is the Eldrazi Death and Taxes, which I was kind of predicting was going to be like a great deck after the ban, with like, you know, like people were saying that Tron was going to be like the deck to beat. And I thought that this deck was going to just like have its day, but this deck like can just like fold hard to like really bad draws. This is a particularly weird one. He's running Shining Shoal. Yeah. So what the hell are you doing with Shining Shoal? This deck already suffers from, like, just bad top decks and, like, running out of gas. And, like, with 24 lands, like, what do you pitch to Shining Shoal?
So if you pitch creatures, Shining Shoal, it's fine. Like you pitch Wall of Omens, extra copies of Thalia,
okay,
stuff like that. But you can also just pay X.
That's true.
Like, because you can just pay X and redirect damage. So, like, it's really good in the beginning of the game. You can pitch, like, extra copies of Thalia or Leonin Arbiter and like, kill an early Goblin Guide and prevent 2 damage. You can prevent bolts and kill Eidolons. Because when you pitch the X, when you pitch for X, if X is greater than 2, you beat Eidolon. So, like, you can...
Yeah, that's a good point.
You can get Lava Spiked, pitch a 2 or a 3 drop, redirect and kill their Eidolon.
Yeah.
And so you've countered their spell and killed their Eidolon and traded 2 for 2. And you're putting pressure on them. So, like, it's not horrible.
No, it's not.
Like, it's not as bad as you think it is, I think.
That's
what needs to be said. It's not as bad as you think it is. And you can see that he's got the burn and the very aggressive matchups in mind. He's playing the full 4 Shining Shoal in the 75.
Yeah.
So I think it would be very hard for a deck like this to lose to burn. With 4 Shining Shoal, Thalia to slow them down. You know, you can also use Shining Shoal to protect your creatures from Lightning Bolt and stuff like that.
Uh-huh. Cool. Well, there was one more deck I saw, and that's worth mentioning, and I totally can't find it. But I just wanted to say it's a thing that exists so that the world can be aware.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry about the dog going off in the background. I don't know what her problem is. Hang on one second.
Blue force tension. Blue force tension. Worf, you go deal with the dog. I'll talk about this white Eldrazi deck some more. Because there's something, and I'm not 100% sure exactly how the card Shining Shoal works. The question is, you know, when you remove this white card from your hand, does this beat sweepers like Anger of the Gods? I'm going to take a look at Gather real quick because it says prevent the X next X damage from a source. Let me read the card. From a source of your choice will deal to you or a creature you control. So if it prevents the 3 damage from Anger of the Gods, does it prevent it from all of your creatures, to all of your creatures, or just one of them?
Are you talking about the Shoal again?
Yeah, Shining Shoal.
That's a good question.
Yeah. Protects both you. Here it is. I actually just found it. The redirection protects both you and your creatures from the source. If the source would deal more than X damage to multiple objects, you decide which of that damage is redirected until X is used up. For example, if your opponent casts a spell that deals 1 damage to you and each of your creatures, 2 creatures, and you cast Shining Shoal for X equal 2, you can have the damage to you and 1 creature redirected to the target, or you can have the damage to both creatures redirected instead. So it doesn't prevent all of an Anger of the Gods if you pitch for 3. But you could, if you have a bunch of 3 toughness guys, you can go like 1-1-1 and redirect it somewhere and prevent 3 of your guys from dying. Something like that.
Mm. Well, that's worth noting.
Yeah. Well, I mean, worth understanding how to play against that card if it comes up against you.
I always like to play that card, Divine Deflection, when that was in Standard, which was basically this card, but it was 1 white and X. And it was the same thing. And so no one saw that shit coming, but that was awesome, man. Like, if you catch someone off guard with a deflection spell like that, it's awesome. Like, not only preventing the damage can be a major, like, tempo swing, but also swinging it back and, like, killing a creature with it. It's like a 3-for-1, you know?
Yeah.
It's crazy. One more thing I want to mention, and I think we better wrap up here tonight. But this deck that I had in mind, and I'm going to have to search for the list. I'll put it in the show notes. But there's this thing going around here with the expertises. You can do something with breaking and entering. Do you know what breaking and entering is?
I do. It's blue black for breaking, which is middle of the top eight. And then it's four black red for entering, which is put a creature card from target player's graveyard into play under your control. And I think it gains haste until end of turn and then exile end of turn.
Yeah, so someone placed in one of the invitationals.
It's a fuse card, right? Is that how that works?
It's a fuse card, yep. Someone placed in one of the invitationals with a brain in the jar, breaking and entering deck that milled itself to put like Eldrazi's into play off of breaking and entering. It's insane.
Could you make sure I read the breaking and entering right? Is entering putting the creature into play permanently or is it just till end of turn?
Permanently, and it gains haste.
Wait, it stays. It doesn't die. Like exile it or end of turn.
Puts in permanently. Put creature onto the from the graveyard onto the battlefield under control. It gains haste until end of turn. Yeah, stays in.
Wow.
Breaking is target player middle of the top eight. So
yeah, I knew that part. I just wasn't sure if the creature stayed in play. That's pretty stupid.
Yeah, I thought it was until end of turn too, but. That's crazy.
That's really dumb. All right.
So it's a ridiculous freaking deck, but it's a real
deal. It seems really dumb.
But at least from an aspect of like when you're playing on Moto and someone plays a brain in the jar, be prepared to get Eldrazi to the face off of that. But it's also worth noting that from a financial aspect, like, man, if you've got Beck and Call or Breaking and Entering sitting around, those cards might be worth some cash if this sort of strategy catches on. If they haven't already, like, started to tick up, because I know that people have been talking quite a bit about these synergies with the expertise.
Yeah, I might give the deck a spin. I don't know. I'm still thinking about it. But right now, I think I'm just having too much fun playing Vintage to want to go do anything else.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's all I have to say for this week. Daryl, you got anything else? We're at 1 hour and 1 minute. That's how consistent we are.
Let's get the hell out of here.
All right. We will see you next week. Have a good one.
Later.
Bye. Card Knock Life is proud to be a part of mtgcast.com. We can be reached at cardknocklifepodcast.com or on Twitter at card_knock_life. We're always looking for more help in generating content for the website. And if you'd be interested in doing so, please email at cardknocklifepodcast@gmail.com.